Hello, kia ora. Welcome back. And I'm so happy to have you here. To anyone listening, thank you. Thank you for sticking with us and for tuning in to this episode today. Things have changed a lot since the last time Tash and I released an episode. We have got a little episode sort of in the meantime that I'll bring out shortly that we recorded about probably 3 months ago. And it was to sort of pick up on where we were both at the end of last year. But I wanted to release it a couple months later. Just we very much like to tune into where we are in the moment. And if things have changed, which they tend to quite frequently, then it doesn't feel as authentic to release something and put it out on the internet, a place where it can last forever, unless we truly feel like that's what we want to be represented by. And so that's why sometimes it takes a little longer at the moment to actually release something that's been recorded for a while. For example, one time I recorded with my mum and it was the most gorgeous little space that we created, and she shared in a way that she'd never shared with me before. But then a couple of weeks later, she said, actually, I don't really believe a lot of the things I said and I'd like to record again. Unfortunately, we never created space to do that. But, you know, to stay true and authentic to my mum's wishes, I'm not going to share that recording. It can just stay as a little gorgeous moment of time in time that we shared together. So anyway, I am in England. And if anyone listens to this who's in England who doesn't know me and you would like to, or know someone who would like to come on the podcast, I am now roaming the Celtic lands, and so am so open to connecting with people here that may like to be in this space. Equally, Tasha is now on the move, roaming around Aotearoa and possibly going to take off soon too. So if you happen to be around us, then just tap us on the shoulder and we'd love to create a little nest with you, invite you into the microwave and ask you about who you are. So I'm in Celtic lands. I'm currently in a little place called Sherborne. I'm doing workaways and I'm absolutely loving it. It's a very different stage of life to what I was in last year. And I'm so thrilled to be living really close to nature, super small communities, connecting with people and connecting with my partner. It's really lush and beautiful and cosmic and I love it. So, what is today about? Today is an episode with my beautiful friend, Joey. Joey's from the UK and moved over to New Zealand last year. This is such a cosmically aligned chat. We had sort of wanted to record for a while and everything fell into place 2 days before I left the country. So we were both really fizzing to be in the microwave together. In this chat, we explore Joey's childhood growing up in a very unique, well, for what to me was a very unique experience growing up in Taoism, and how the feminine and masculine energies present in his childhood have molded and shaped who he is today. We also talk about friendship and sexuality within friendship and so much good stuff. Joey really brings this incredible perspective to life, incredible chaos, like really beautiful chaos. And I love that about him. I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation. If it tingles anything inside you, feel free to get in touch. You can follow us on Instagram at micro_wave_feminism. And yeah, we can't wait to meet you, connect with you. Enjoy this episode. Mwah. Go well.
Kia ora. Welcome to Microwave Feminism. But this time, it's season two. In season two, Tash and I bring our most authentic selves to explore, in conversation with others, what feminism means to us and where we see ourselves within questions of feminism.
We are here for authentic, vulnerable and playful conversations with you.
And of course, talking about what it's like to be a badass feminist.
No mai, haere mai.
Welcome, and we hope you enjoy.
Thank you.
So here on the brink of your departure.
We're doing it.
We're fitting it in.
We've squeezed a little time in to hop in a tent.
It so almost didn't happen so
yeah.
much.
Yeah.
And then it did. Of course it did.
Yeah. I almost was thinking this morning, I was like, this was always going to happen.
Joey needed to see this place.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's dive straight in.
Yeah, yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
Again. First things first, who the fuck are you?
I am...
Take as much time as you need.
It's quite a direct question, isn't it? My name is Joey. I'm giving my PhD presentation introduction. I'm doing a PhD in physics. Is that what really makes me interesting? I think what really makes me interesting is that I am an optimist and I am passionate about pretty much everything. I find so many things interesting. I find the world such a beautiful place. And I like to see if I can make it as warm and happy a place as possible. Mm. I like to find the joy in even the most horrible things. I like to find the excitement in the scary things. I like to find the silver linings of Forget the Cloud every day. And I also like to talk quite fast some of the time about all that. So I guess that makes me talkative and optimistic, which seems a reasonably fun combo. People seem to like to chat. But I guess that's my brief of me.
If you were to like draw yourself or paint yourself, what kind of colours would you use?
Okay. Painting myself might be different because I would paint myself in quite earthy tones.
Mm.
In browns and forest greens and warm colours. But in reality, I know for a fact my two favourite colours are not quite there. Mm. My two favourite colours, and I don't know why I always feel like two is most important, is a royal purple and a sunset orange.
Royal purple,
yep.
Sunset orange,
yep.
Okay.
So what I used to do is I used to ask my friends, I'd say, give me two of your favourite colours and I'll write a story for you based on them. And so I used to take people's two favourite colours and write a story. And really quickly, I started to see the patterns between these colours and the people. And it got to the point where, like, I would be months past and I would look back at these two colours and I'd know whose was whose because they represent them so strongly.
Whoa.
And so when I form my own two favourite colours, there's a weird amount of pride and kind of happiness with the choice because I look at them and I'm like, yeah, those are solid colours.
Yeah.
You know, and one day I'll consider it and they'll have changed and I'm like, oh, wow, you know, I'm a different person to royal purple and sunset orange, Joe. You know, now I'm hot pink and who knows what.
Fluoro green.
Fluoro green, Joe. It's back to 90s colours.
And final, intro question.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to be any animal, what would you be?
Easy.
And why?
Always, and it's a cliche answer and I hate myself for it, but I can justify
it. Is it a Labrador?
It's a wolf.
Ah.
I would be a pack animal. Everyone who's ever met me knows I'd be a pack animal.
Yeah.
And the idea of just being surrounded by people running endlessly, hunting, playing, just is bliss to me.
Mm.
You know, just in a warm fur up in the mountains. Oh, good God, that's me through and through. And I'm obsessive and I like sticks and I like all of that stuff like a dog. But a wolf's slightly more romantic and slightly more flattering than being like, I'll be a border collie because I'm obsessed with everything. You know, in reality, I am a border collie, but I would like to be a wolf.
You're like a wolf that's like kind of watches a family through the window thinking, I'd quite like to live with that family, but I'll go back to my pack.
Hey, what's that? That looks good.
Yeah. What's that warm fire? Yeah.
But yeah, a wolf for sure.
Why are you here today?
I have been invited here, but I'm here because...
Who the fuck did that?
I like to discuss, and I feel like in the few times we've actually found the time to sit down and discuss things, we have really interesting conversations about whatever it is we decide to discuss. And apparently my outlook on things can be interesting, and so I'd like to share that.
Mm.
Hopefully that's an apt answer.
Yeah,
mm.
Cool. Speaking of those things,
mm.
we'll dive in with where this podcast in this space has originated from, which is talking around understanding that is only a portal to dive into what has ended up being conversations around identity, conversations around what makes the way that you show up in the world what shapes the way that you show up in the world and what lens through which you see the world, that sort of thing. So we'll use this question as a trampoline into that world. Mm-hmm. So what does feminism mean to you?
Feminism is always interesting. I remember when I was younger, I was in a relationship with someone who was very feminist, and I had a male friend of mine who was very, I would rather say, equalist. And he used to kind of promote more equal footing, kind of say that women were better, women are better, women are so amazing, look at all these things women could do. And the person I was with kind of took that as women are better and started kind of prancing around like, I'm better than you. And I saw it as he was trying to even the playing field, and she took it as women are better. And so that's kind of something that stuck with me of, God, do I want equality? God, do I want us on equal footing? And God, do I want to pull anyone that's lower up to us? But I don't think anyone should be put down. And that's a bit of a label that's thrown around with feminism that I find is a little bit, I don't know, like people use it to channel a lot of kind of disgust and negative emotions when it's a beautiful thing that we should be cultivating together, not kind of crushing one another. You know, if we're both down in the dust, that's not as good as equality up somewhere high. So that would be my kind of thing on feminism. I think it should undergo a corporate rebranding into equalism. But I guess I have the easier end of the stick, and it's easier for me to say all these things when I don't have to put up a lot of the qualms that women might have with society and stuff like that.
What's an important lens through which you see the world?
Well, this is a reason this sort of conversation can be a little scary, I think, is that, at least for me, I think kind of gender, sex, attraction, all that sort of thing plays a large role in my life.
Yeah.
And discussing it and kind of making that clear can be a little scary, especially when for other people it isn't the same. So, I remember talking to a friend of mine who's working with, I think, Syrian refugees. And, you know, they've been through all these horrible, horrible things. Like, you know, people they know had died. People they know had traumatic, traumatic things. And she would talk to them about, like, their lives and stuff. And I think she was, like, partly therapist or something. And they talked about relationships and who they wanted to be with right now and how they were struggling with the relationships. And I remember that made me feel a lot better about this sort of thing, because even those people, the center of their life is relationships. But sometimes I feel like, especially, you know, it seems a main theme in my life right now, that sex and relationships can be such a big thing in people's lives. It can kind of disrupt everything else. And so the lens through which I see all these sorts of things is sometimes like, okay, this is how I see it, but I shouldn't see it like that. You know, or I need to be careful, or I need to manage it, you know, because it can be so all-encompassing, so obsessible, so larger than life that it is all that my life can be. And I think this is why I'm, you know, nervous to talk about this sort of thing, because, you know, what if I say that and everyone's like, oh, that's really weird, Joey. You know, this is why the story of the person who worked with refugees was like, okay, thank God. You know, it's not just me.
Tell me more about that. Like, what is that lens? Like, how do you interpret gender, sexuality, relationships? It's a hard question.
It is a broad
not
question.
Not as a tagline answer, but like, you know, if you were to explore that.
I think because I am so in love with reality in life, I find myself wanting to share that a lot. And there are many ways to share that. You can share that romantically, you can share that sexually, you can share that emotionally. But I enjoy all of those sorts of intimacy. And so, you know, I want someone to take places and do things with. I want someone to express my emotions to and have them back and forth with. I want all of these things all the time to a point where I think, for example, earlier in my life when these things fell into my lap, I would just take them and make them my entire life. And I think I've very much wired myself to think that I should have that all the time, you know, and that the second I don't have, call it a partner or someone to sleep with or someone to be emotional with or someone to be intimate with, you know, I don't have one of the things I need. You know, since I've moved away from university, I was in a 4-year relationship, and I think I just programmed in that entire time that I need someone to be emotional with, I need all these things. And then as I've moved away from that, I'm slowly having to learn it's okay to not have these things, but it's a hard and long lesson, which I thank God I'm making progress on. But it's a little bit, you know, there have been points in my life where everything is brilliant apart from the fact I don't have this one thing. Mm. And that is enough to ruin my life in my own terms, in my own lens. Mm. And enough that I struggle to find happiness. And I think that's completely unacceptable. That's completely horrible. You know, like, and I'm slowly, slowly, bit by bit, learning it's okay to be alone. It's okay to express your emotions to yourself, to journal, to all this sort of stuff. Mm. You know, it's not the be-all, end-all that I thought it was when I was young and fresh to it and thinking, wow, I can find people who are interested in me, who will give me attention, who will give me sex, who will give me passion. You know, like, it's addictive, isn't it? Mm. I guess it's so addictive.
Mm. I'm curious how you dance the line, or I guess how you interpret the space that space between friendship and relationships where you can be more intimate, and what that journey has been like for you.
So I think I think years ago I was less good at this. I would just jump at anything that came my way and not think for repercussions or how to manage it or anything like that. And there's been a lot of progression into finding out how to communicate, and firstly to communicate, and secondly how to communicate. And you always think you're doing better, and then you always realize there's more to be done. So, like, you know, the first step was starting to communicate and being like, oh, you know, I think I want this, or, you know, timidly because you're scared of what people will say. And then at some point I made the realization that if I'm honest and open and say what I mean and put it out there, usually things end up okay. But then you've got to take into account that people might not believe you, people might misunderstand you. You know, I would say what I say and then think that removes all guilt from me because I've said what I've said, and if they understand what I'm saying, they're making a choice based on that. But people let their desires get a hold of them, and they'll dismiss what you say. You can tell someone, hey, yeah, I just want to be friends, but if we want to sleep together, that's nice. And they'll hear, you know, we can sleep together and see where it goes. Mm. And that's not what I said.
Mm.
You know, and you can't go around saying something, seeing someone has not understood you, and continuing to act that way, because that's not fair. And so, you know, the next step was learning, oh, you know, you have to, you know, take away all benefit of the doubt, or maybe give all benefit of the doubt, which around it'd be, I don't know. But, like, you know, you talk to someone, and if you see any hint of them misunderstanding of doing something you don't think is, you know, for example, if you see someone forming genuine connections and that's not what you're looking for, you should say, you know, you can't just keep using that as a path to get what you want from them, you know.
Yeah.
It's not fair to them, and it's not fair to you, because it'll twist you up with guilt inside.
Yeah.
And so, you know, more recently I've been completely honest and open, and I've told people, and I've made sure they've understood. And when I don't, I've had to have the strength against my own desires and theirs to say, look, because I don't think you're going to do what you say you're going to do, this can't happen. And that's fine. And it's kind of nice to be able to, as I get older, have the strength to say that, because I certainly didn't when I was younger.
Mm.
But it's been very rewarding for people to, you know, because I'm so communicative in terms of that, but also making sure people feel secure, making sure people feel happy. I've had a lot of people turn around and say, wow, this is how everyone should do it. You know, why don't more people do it this way? And that's nice to hear, you know.
And also heartbreaking.
Well, very heartbreaking. Oh, the stories. I think people open up to me quite easily, especially in that sort of space. And the stories I hear, I'm like, God, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Like, so many people I'm with have been used, abused, mistreated, you know, like, and to be frank, you know, all of that in the extreme sense, but also in the just, like, most guys don't know how to treat someone, right? Even if they try, I swear. And maybe that's hypocritical, arrogant coming from me, because I'm sure I've done my fair share of evils and wrongs, but God, some people are like, oh wow, I can be treated this way. Mm. And it's like, oh
yeah,
have a hug and a hot cup of tea,
yeah,
and let's just sit and chat for a bit. You know, the whole, like, I don't know, more and more as of recent, as of late, I've been like saying actively, I am not interested in doing anything with you that you won't enjoy or rushing you to do it. You know, I'd rather, if I invite someone around to stay at mine for the weekend, you know, implying that we're going to sleep together or be intimate, and we get there and I'll just have a laugh with them. And if we go the entire weekend just having a laugh, of course that's all I wanted. Mm. Of course I wanted to have a good time with people and go as far as they want. I'm interested in those further things, but I don't care enough for them to make anyone uncomfortable. You know, comfortability is the best. And often I find when people are comfortable, they want those things more.
Yeah.
You know, like I was with someone recently who, you know, when we first started getting together, like, I don't actually like sex. I've never enjoyed sex. And then we ended up getting comfortable and we ended up getting that far. And they were like, holy shit, this is fun. Mm. You know, and all it takes is a bit of relaxation and comfortability.
Yeah.
And communication and treating other people like goddamn other human beings.
Yeah. This is such a, I remember this being such like a fucking epidemic when we were younger women,
mm-hmm.
even like when we were girls.
Yeah.
And just coming back to your friends after a weekend and being like, oh, like, you know, he asked me, like, oh, he said to me, you know, if you're ever uncomfortable, just let me know. Yeah. And that being like, oh, he's so sweet. Like, it's literally the bare fucking minimum. And I was in an interview the other day for a job, and the job is facilitating relationship and sexual education in schools and universities.
Oh, you're good for that.
I would be so, it's my dream fucking job. One of the questions they asked is, why do you think this work is important? Mm. Oh, and fuck, I wish I had 20 minutes to answer this question alone.
20 hours.
Yeah, 20 hours. Or like 10 podcast episodes. Yeah. But like, human relationship, no one is teaching us, apart from our parents, how to be in human relationships.
And it's lucky to get the ones you get sometimes.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. And like, you know, bless their souls, they weren't taught particularly well either. That can sometimes lead to, you know, big traumas.
Mm.
But it is the foundation of society.
Yep.
Nothing exists without human relationships. Right. Like, how could we possibly think that that isn't the core? Unless, an important caveat, you're an extremely spiritual person and your primary, your core thing is your relationship with the divine. And that I totally get. But like, that in itself is often a mirroring of relationships with other humans or with other beings or nature. Like, I just, relationship is just like, oh.
So fundamental.
So fundamental. And
did you ever meet the people who, bless them, I meet people from time to time and they've been brought up in such a harsh environment and it's nothing to do with them, that they will really struggle with all forms of relationship. And sometimes it feels like, you know, unless they really, really put effort in for life, they're going to struggle.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that fundamental and undermining, you know, that it's like a flip of some horrible coin, whether you manage to be formed in a way that will allow you joy in that regard or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess luckily there are joys to be found in other ways. But as I've already said, and we've already said, you know, relationships are one of the big ones for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know?
On that note, to the extent that you want to share with me / with other people, how has your view on relationships been formed by your upbringing or what those relationships looked like?
I think my idea of what I can be in a relationship and what I can look for in a relationship has been especially broadened by how I was brought up. And I do want to caveat or kind of preface everything I say with, you know, I was brought up by two parents who were practicing Taoism at the time. And I don't know if that makes me Taoist. I don't know what that makes me. And I've kind of read through some of the works myself. But I don't want to make it sound like the opinions I hold are representative of anything other than the weird world I live in and the experiences I have.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was brought up very much... Well, it's interesting because I was brought up very much encouraged to have any form of quote-unquote masculine or feminine behaviour that I want. But I had very kind of... opposite parents. I mean, the concept of yin and yang are quite kind of globally known these days, which if people don't know are part of Taoism. And to me, I've always thought it interesting that I have, you know, half of the yin yang is my dad and the other's the mum.
Yeah.
But to such an extreme, my dad's such a masculine guy until he's not. He's really soft underneath it all. He's so, you know, he's really a little kid at heart. Whereas my mum is a very yin woman and very, you know, just goes with the flow. But underneath, she's got this hard conviction. And it's having these two parents was simultaneously very freeing, because I saw that I, you know, all this huge range. But like, it got to the point, for example, where let's say I ask them for something, for advice, I'll get one extreme piece of advice from one and the other extreme from the other. And it's like, which do I follow? And I guess that has given me the scope to kind of choose and do as I will. But also might lead to a bit of extremism.
Mm.
And so, I don't know, I have this, I'm allowed to go anywhere in this range, but I tend to find myself falling in extremes.
Mm.
But what I most enjoy about that is it's enabled me to not have the pressures to be a masculine man or a feminine woman, if that's what I wanted to be. I just am what I am. I think, you know, there's nothing better than just finding the balance that is within myself. And I've been told that all my life. You know, thank you, whoever, you know, deigned for this to happen, because it's so freeing.
Mm.
You know, for the amount of male friends I know who struggle to be anything other than hyper-masculine, you know, like, I you know, my dad has found his freedom, but I know people who deep down are soft like him, and they can't express it. They're locked away by whatever they learn in society, and you know, I feel those pressures too, but I'm sure less than others.
Mm.
You know, I'm freed from a lot of those, you know, pressures. I'm very happy to be feminine, and honestly, I think sometimes being feminine makes me all the more masculine.
Oh,
to use those odd terms.
Yeah,
you know, like, to be strong while being subtle, to be, you know, quiet while being, you know, vibrant, to have conviction in your softness is a power in itself.
I almost feel like what you've described there, like, with the dynamics in your mum and dad, like, to me, those are the archetypes.
Yeah.
Like that, like, to me, that's every man, and to me, that's every woman. Yeah. Like, that's almost like an Adam and Eve picture. Is like, that is the interplay. If you were to look at majority of people who identify as those genders, that's what you'll find.
Sure.
A sort of tougher exterior with a soft inside, and then a flowing exterior with a convicted, strong, passionate inside.
And perhaps they formed more that way because of the belief they've been following.
Yeah.
You know, like, they have, you know, affixed themselves to the way they've chosen to look at the world a little bit and formed that way. Or maybe they were that much way before and they've just found something that describes them to themselves either way. But I think it's a very apt description of a lot of people.
Mm.
And obviously I have no one else's parents to compare to, because I've only had one set. So, you know, I'm like, actually, my parents are different to other parents. Maybe they're not. It's hard to say. But yeah, I'm lucky to have had a lot of love and a lot of support. I remember I went to a Catholic primary school. And I remember when I was in Catholic primary school, I had a best friend. And I used to have these thoughts of, like, what if we played together naked? And I was like, no, that's completely unacceptable. You know, like, the people at school wouldn't like that. Like, you know, being gay is not okay, sort of thing. And I used to be like, okay, well, instead we could just do press-ups together. And that was, like, the kind of the way I'd take it. And, like, I never really thought much on it. And I was like, yeah, I'm not gay. Like, I kind of just tucked it away. And then I remember kind of I ended up getting with a guy at a party once when I was 15 or 16. And I just thought, yeah, that's fun. Like, you know, I'm happy to be these things. I just never thought I was it.
Yeah.
And then I went home to my dad and I ended up talking to him. We're very open. We talk about sex and relationships and all this sort of stuff. And I kind of was like, oh, yeah. I got with a guy last night. And he was just like, yeah. Didn't even look up from whatever he was doing. He's like, oh, nice. Don't tell your granddad, though. You know, granddad's a through and through Yorkshireman sort of thing. And so, you know, that was kind of, it was so weirdly satisfying for dad to not even bat an eyelid.
Mm.
Like, it wasn't like, he wasn't like, oh, I know. He just didn't care.
Mm.
You know, do what you want. If you want to get with guys, get with guys. Express yourself, you know? And, you know, oh, that path of realizing that, hold on, I kind of like men, is still tough.
Mm.
You know, like, there is so much inbuilt homophobia
in
well, partly my Catholic upbringing, but just, I think, an English upbringing. And, you know, like, as someone who is, I hoped to be so free from so many of these things, it's still so hard to accept that sort of stuff. And also, men are shit. It sometimes feels like, you know, there is this idea of the sort of man I want to be with, and I never find them, you know.
To be fair, like, I think that a lot of women are shit too, and it's hard to say that, but I just think that the way we've been programmed means that so many of us aren't free.
Yeah.
So many of us aren't living, like, in our essence. But I think that's it. So many of us aren't living in our essence.
And when you do, when you hit that stride, God, everything just works.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying how everything just works when you find the you are.
Yeah. And then you find other people who are also in that too. It's just fucking resume, magic. Yeah.
I have to say, you know, women might be as bad as men, but God, they're pretty.
Yeah, so like, pretty, yeah.
It's like, you look at a man, you're like, oh, you're horrible, and you look a bit off, you know? Whereas you find a woman, you're like, oh, it's so pretty, and you can't see the kind of machinations underneath.
So pretty. Yeah,
it's like a steel trap with a flower on top.
It's funny, that story you shared around wanting to play naked. Yeah. I was reminded of this. I hadn't thought about it. Actually, I don't think I've ever thought about this.
Yep.
But I was reminded on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting with some of my friends and they were doing that thing. Did you ever play that game where you touch somebody's leg and then you go closer and closer and closer until they kind of say stop? And it's like a game of chicken, right? And I remembered playing this as a kid. Mm-hmm. And when someone would do it to me, there was that thing inside my head that was like, I'm really enjoying this. Yeah. And I kind of don't want them to stop. But like... But if I let it go too far, suddenly it becomes...
Not okay.
Lezzo or whatever the fuck it was when we were kids. Yeah. And I was reminded of this so potently, being like, fuck, like those were the little... Those were the things that I suppressed throughout my childhood as not okay. From what source? From every fucking source around us.
It. Like without consideration, without anything, you're just like, oh... Tuck that away for later.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so insidious, so surreptitious. It just gets you and you're not even thinking about it. I realized that I did that a year or two ago. You know, that was, 15 years ago that I did that? And it took 15 years of that memory being sat in the back of my head for me to realize, oh, hold on. That was me suppressing some form of, like, you know, just expression of love for another guy. I don't even know if gay is the right word.
No.
It's literally just, I like this guy enough that I just want to be intimate with him. You know, we're close, we're friends.
Yeah.
I remember I was especially confused. I remember I got really close to one of my friends once. I won't name names, but... And it got to the point where, like, I was like, I am so close to this friend right now that I want to sleep with them. And I was like... But I'm not gay. And it's just like... And at the time, I don't think I was interested in sex. I didn't find him physically attractive. But there was just a level of closeness where I was like, well, the logical next step is physical intimacy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that might speak a lot on where I place sex in my kind of pantheon, if you will.
Yeah.
Is like, you know, it's just another step of intimacy. It means no more to me than a hug or a... You know, it's deeper. It's a stronger connection. But it's just a way of expressing yourself.
Mm.
You know, it's like going to a concert and seeing someone perform or having them perform one-on-one. You know what I mean? That one-on-one is so intimate, but it's still the same act of performance, I guess. Anyway.
I had a very, very similar experience with a friend where we were so close and I was like, do I kiss them? Like, I don't know. No, but we're just having a sleepover, you know? Like, and you then, tuck it away as like a... But all it is you just want to be intimate with another human being. Oh. I've been talking a lot recently with Caden, my partner, about those. Have you watched Brave New World?
I've not watched much.
There's these incredible scenes in Brave New World. I don't know what they're like in the book, but in the recent series, they're these party scenes basically. Mm-hmm. But everyone in this world takes like uppers, right? And have you read the book?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. And there's these scenes where everyone's at a party and basically it just turns into a, like, it's orgy, but it's not an orgy. It's this beautiful artwork of naked bodies moving to the rhythm. Yeah. There's these, like, strobe lights and filming those scenes must have been fucking insane, the amount of, like, intimacy they would have needed. But just, like... Yeah, like just naked bodies, like flowing, and this big creative energy, like, and you're like, whoa, like, that is so far from the reality that we live in. We're like so far from being able to be intimate with human beings that aren't our significant other or living in a polyamorous world and with a lot of other people who are safe in that space. But those are small pockets of communities compared to a lot of society.
I have to say, like, I think if more people were thought how I thought, which I'm not saying is the right way to think or anything, like, I reckon it would be very commonplace to just physically express yourself whenever you felt it. And everyone would be, I guess, more whimsy, but more in tune and more intuitive. You know what I mean? Like, if no one cared for all these, it being bad stuff, you know, if I want to kiss someone and, you know, I think that they would want to too, go, you know, express yourself. It doesn't mean, you know, as long as you can communicate and make clear what you want, who knows what you'll find, what energies will flow, what, all of that sort of stuff. And it's crazy to think that if I'm on the more open side of things and I'm trying to open up further, some people must really be closed off. Some people really must have the tap shut and nothing flowing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. When do you feel you're most authentically able to be Joey?
Oof.
I thought I got your name there wrong for a second. No, wait, what the fuck? One. Is your name Joey?
The oof was me being like, it's John. I'm going to tell a little diatribe, a little off story.
Okay.
Perfect. I once was flying to the Netherlands. I was in the airport and I ended up talking to this Dutch woman for 2 hours about personalities and people. And we kind of ended up coming up with this hypothesis, and I think we drew out on a napkin a little diagram of how people, if there's a map, imagine a big square map of all the different ways people can be, and, you know, someone might be on the top left if they're one way, and the bottom right if they're another way, and all across, everyone's scattered across this huge minefield of different personalities, and you think, oh, I'm a point here. But people aren't a point, they're a cloud. And some people have a bigger cloud, some people have such variation in who they are and who they can be, and some people have a smaller cloud. But on top of that, there's kind of the central cloud of who you are and comfortable being, and then around that, slightly bigger, slightly kind of outside your comfort zone, is who you can be in the right settings. And so there are lots of people, lots of situations in which I'm in that inner cloud, in which I'm, you know, I'm comfortable being here with you talking in this sort of way, but there are people who I'm just as close to you as that I wouldn't be comfortable doing this sort of thing with. And, you know, I find I'm lucky that a lot of things are within that central cloud. I tend to be quite comfortable in a lot of situations, but you know, the places in which I'm comfortable are a lot of different places. I tend to enjoy company and enjoy people that I feel like will understand what I'm saying without me having to put more words. And I feel like when two people talk, there's two clouds colliding. And the better you get on, the more bits collide and the more you understand. And, you know, even your best of friends, you might get half of it, but it's enough to account for the difference. Sometimes you're talking to people and you can say what to you is explicitly clear, and explicitly obvious, and they don't get it, you know? And I love being in spaces and finding people where, you know, you can say little and mean a lot. And so I feel incredibly comfortable when communication is clear in spaces where you don't need to explain everything. Everyone knows what you mean. Everyone knows you. Everyone knows your essence. Everyone knows everything. And it gets to the point with some friends where, I'm sure you have this, where you have psychic kind of conversations. A twitch of an eyebrow, a smile here. Someone says a key word across the room and you kind of glance at one another like, that is comfortability at its finest. Communication without effort is, I think, kind of the highlight of all of the situations where I'm most comfortable.
That's beautiful. That reminds me of something I was going to say earlier, is that, like, it's so interesting realizing that the reality that I'm speaking is not the reality someone
completely
else is
different.
Hearing.
Different.
And even when you think you're on the same wavelength, sometimes that reality is going to be different. But actually, that doesn't always matter, because as long as that person's feeling clouds collide and I'm feeling clouds collide, whether our reality is, like, there have been moments we've been playing games as a family and everyone's pissing themselves laughing, right? And then we all say why we're laughing and it's completely fucking different. We've all experienced what someone has said in a different way, but it's equally
humorous to all of you, equally enlightening to everyone.
This
makes me think of, like, I don't believe I have the right to change anyone else's reality in any way. I don't think if anyone holds a horrible opinion, it's not mine to change. You know, if they act in a way that I don't agree with, I'll say something. But, like, who am I to comment on anyone's reality when there's no objective reality or standpoint that I can measure from? You know, I'm in this weird drifting perception of the world that has no rock. It's just adrift. And so is everyone. You know, and who's anyone to cast shade on anyone else when, if my reality gets me through the day, you know, if I'm laughing at something which everyone else would find completely horrific and horrible, but it gets me through the day and it doesn't lead to me acting or influencing anyone else's world in a way that's bad for them. No one has any right to say anything, I don't think. And this is so bad in today's day and age where everyone seems to feel the need to express what they think and argue about it. Like, the amount of people who can't agree to disagree. You know what I mean? Like, good, why do we all have to agree? We've all had different upbringings and different realities and, you know... Have you ever talked to two people who are arguing or something's happened between them and you hear both of their stories and they're completely different? Like, even from moment one, they're different stories because they live in fundamentally different worlds where different things happened. And you listen. I had two best friends who absolutely fell out and both of them were right. Both of their perspectives were completely accurate and I could pick together the full story from what they were saying and you can see where their jigsaw pieces fit together. But of course their realities were different. Of course what they perceive is different and they're both right. I don't like this one right answer mentality. I don't like this you're wrong, I'm right. I'm right, you're wrong. Crap. You know? Like, let everyone do what makes them happy. Let everyone exist in the way that works for them. And, you know, action is where there's a problem, not in thought.
Yeah.
You know, we have freedom of speech, but not freedom of thought, it sometimes feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think that comes to, like, the point of why people have conversations is like, I understand. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say this recently, but like conversation is just two people trying to, what is it? Like trying to kind of reach the same point and you're just, and, or every conversation is you trying to convince somebody else of something. Right. But I genuinely think that the reason people have conversations is different. And if two people are coming into a group of people are coming into a conversation with different purposes for why they're there, then often people fall into this like, oh no, I'm genuinely just trying to like explore ideas. Whereas somebody else is like, oh, I'm trying to
show you you're wrong.
And honestly, this has been like a confronting thing for me because often I find in conversations I'm actually trying to get to a truth and then I have conversations with other people and they're just exploring ideas and I get quite confronted because I'm like, oh no, that's horrible or blah, blah, blah. And trying to sink into this, actually, if a group of people are coming together, all we can ever really do is just explore ideas because we don't want truth, is
no. Well, I don't believe in objective truth.
Yeah, exactly.
It winds up some friends of mine a hell of a lot, but I don't believe in objective truth. I'd be like, there's no such thing.
And it's also so much more beautiful to just explore ideas and acknowledge that by the end of this conversation, we don't need to have gotten anywhere. We can be the same people we were coming into it, or we might be vastly different, but actually it doesn't matter. The joy is...
Having the conversation.
Having the conversation.
Yeah. And I do have to say, I go into these conversations saying, look, I would love... for you to convince me of something new. I'm so open to receive new ideas, but I will weigh it using my own scales and take it from there. Give me information and I will see if it works for me. You know, I don't tend to keep that well educated in terms of like what's going on in the world and that sort of stuff. That's a lot for me. Maybe that makes me weak and maybe I should pay more attention, but you know, often people tell me things and it's new to me. And so, you know, I don't have that many strong formed opinions on politics and all that sort of stuff, but you know, if people tell me stuff, I can start to form opinions. You know what I mean? And so tell me all you've got to say and I'll see what I think. Easy.
We had this really beautiful moment with me, you and Caden when we were just, you know, talking and sharing or whatever. And then you'd shared an experience and then Caden shared like a thought around it. And you were like, oh, well, like, I'd actually genuinely never thought about it that way. Like, maybe that's what that is, or maybe that's an idea of what that is. And it was that beautiful moment where we're all kind of like, cool, like...
Progress.
And, like, and I think the other side of that is genuinely being open to admit that that is a way that you hadn't seen it before. Yeah.
People are so scared to be wrong that they won't admit, oh, that's interesting, that's new. Relax, everyone. We're among friends. You know, no one's... You know, at school, someone's like, you're wrong. We're not at school anymore. You know, if you're like, oh, actually, I'm going to go back on the opinion I've held and argued for the past 2 hours. You're right, actually. Say it softly, and who's going to really... Who's going to really disagree with that? You know, it's very respectable and very strong. Strength in subtlety. Strength in softness. You know? You know, don't be afraid to be, I don't know, not like dig into the ground. This is what I'm going to do. You know, there's respect to be gained, I think, in actually considering what you're allowed to say.
Mm. Do you have, you might not have one, so feel free to say no, but do you have like a quote or a mantra or even like a, you know, like a livable quote, like a lifestyle? Well, I don't know what you call that, that you live by or something that you remind yourself often, something that sticks with you?
I do. I think it's more of a commentary on how I tend to do life and the shortcomings of how I live, which is, I tend to overthink. I tend to get lost in planning weeks ahead. I remember there are points in my life where, like, it feels as if, you know, I've got a TV in front of me and that's my life. And in the top corner, there's a smaller screen and that's everything in the future. And it's to the point where, like, I'm constantly picturing, I can see right now what the shape of the next few weeks is going to take, like, what hills there are, what the landscape's like, to the point where, like, I'm planning, you know, I look in the fridge and every choice I make about in the fridge right now is based on the next 2 weeks ahead of me. And, you know, it's gone to points where that time's so long that, like, it's paralyzing and I'll just crush under the weight.
Yeah.
And so the main thing, the single biggest, most important thing for me to do is remember, and this is the quote for me, everything is now. There is not a damn thing that isn't now. I don't know whether everyone's good at it or I'm lucky, but I seem to be really good at doing things in the moment, improvising whatever happens. I can't plan as well as I can improvise. And as I might want to just stress and all this about what I can do in the future, the best thing for me to do is forget about it, relax, focus on what's right in front of me, and let myself just flow. You know, and not to say, okay, I shouldn't have a vague plan for the future, or I shouldn't, you know, think about things vaguely. But when you're living in that space constantly, yeah, when you're like, should I have chorizo tonight? Or might I need that chorizo in 3 weeks' time because this person's coming to visit and they really, and it's like, God, you get lost up in crap in your head. Yeah. Everything's now.
Yeah.
Everything's now. Give it your time and your energy. You know, trying to pry at the future with a really long stick, you're not going to get anywhere. Yeah. Pick up the box that's right in front of you and it's easy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's a really, like, I mean, to me, this is one of the key ingredients to life is, you know, presence and being in the now. But I like the way that, it's interesting the way that people, different people get there.
Yeah, yeah.
And the different reasons different people get there. You know, for someone it might be the past is like, is really overwhelming.
Yes.
And for some people it's the future. Yeah, and for some people it's actually the present is really overwhelming. Yeah. And so actually coming back to your
body
in the, or even like, Caden, I'll check if you're okay with me sharing this, but you know, we're moving overseas in 2 days, and Caden was like driving to my house with all of his stuff, and he noticed the anxiety like coming up, and he said to me yesterday, he's like, oh, hello anxiety, like how are you doing today, like and found it in the body and asked it, you know, or talked to it as if it was this thing, because it. That brings you back into the present of sitting with the thing rather than letting that thing take over your future and inform or try to inform decisions you're going to make. Instead, just being like, hey.
Hey. Also, you know what I said earlier about learning to enjoy everything? I've learned to take stress and be like, what an experience this is. This is driving me to do something. This anxiety is, you know, and sometimes, God, the whining voices of anxiety, like, it's like, the cicada sound in your head just like squeaking away.
Wow.
But, you know, there is enjoyment to be found in it and a purpose for it. You know, like, don't forget that you've been wired to do these things for a reason, to drive you to do things and to take that into account. If you're feeling anxious, there's a reason.
Yeah.
And to listen as to why.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear the thing of, like, depression is in the past, anxiety is in the future?
Yeah.
That kind of comes to mind of, like, you know, I am lucky that at the moment I actually am not feeling particularly depressed. You know, it's brilliant. You know, it's so nice to be in one of these periods. And so at the moment, I'm not thinking about the past at all. You know, anything that happened ever in the past is just like a memory. There's no weight to it. There's no dissatisfaction in it. And the present is pleasant enough that there's no weight there. And so for me at the moment, it's only the anxiety of the future.
Yeah.
But there are times when all three weigh so much.
Oof.
And you've got these weights on your back.
Yeah.
One of my friends used to call me Sisyphus. Do you know who Sisyphus is?
No.
Is a Greek. What did he do? Was he the one who brought fire to the human race? It might have been someone else. And basically, his punishment for his crime was he had to push a rock up a mountain endlessly.
I've heard
he'd push
one.
It up all day, And then come night, it would roll back down to the bottom.
Yeah.
Just endlessly pushing the rock. And my friend used to wind me up by being like, you know, you've built this rock of your own making in front of you and you're just constantly pushing it up this hill. And like, we had a relationship where we'd just rip into one of those. It was brilliant, you know, it's nice to have that depth of relationship. But God, it stung because it was so true. I've built this rock and I'm just constantly pushing it around. And it's like, if you learn to kind of let go of all of these knots you have in your mind, then the rock just kind of gets smaller and smaller until you're like, wow, I can move really quickly and easily when there's no rock. Mm. And it makes reality so much sweeter after the fact.
Yeah.
You know?
I genuinely felt the rock disappear when I finished university. I think I turned to someone and I was like, I feel so fucking happy. Yeah. And I'm so light. Yeah. And I'm like, whoa. Yeah. That was 6 years of a rock. Actually, 23 years because it's education. That's that rock. But yeah, like when you have those moments of realizing a rock has disappeared, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it is a rock. I think there are like 10 up there.
Yeah, there are so many.
And we throw away one and we're like, wow, I'm free now.
Yeah,
you know? And then the other 9 grow.
Yeah, exactly.
To fill up the space.
Yeah.
But, you know, we work on it and I'm sure we do make progress, but it's kind of like, there's the thing of like, I've solved my one problem.
Yeah.
Have I?
Yeah.
Is that how that works?
Yeah.
A thing that I think ties in my world to a lot of these sorts of things is self-esteem, self-worth, all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
And I think that's another reason that it can play on people's minds so much.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as someone who wasn't particularly popular at school and who didn't kind of get much attention from women or anything until they were older, when I did, I was like, hey, you know, this makes me feel like I'm worth something. And that quickly develops into like a,
yep.
You know, am I a valid human being if I'm not, you know, attracting people? Why don't people look at me when I'm in public? Why does no one like me? And it's like, yeah, it's so shallow and vapid of me, you know. And again, it's one of the things I'm working on. And thank God I'm finding some relative success in it, you know, finding worth. It was actually a compliment from a guy, a friend of mine, has been the biggest contributor, the biggest help in realizing my worth.
Mm.
Because, you know, the second anyone who does find me attractive or wants to sleep with me compliments me, I'm like, oh, they're just saying that to get my pants. Mm. And it's interesting kind of balance to strike once you start to get some confidence between arrogance as well.
Mm.
And so kind of all of this attraction, all of these ideas of sex and, you know, your relationship with your own kind of masculine, feminine, other people's, all of it is, for a lot of my life, been undermined by like, oh, I just want people to like me.
Yeah.
Oh, I just want people to find me attractive. Oh, I just want the validation of like the fathomless, depthless validation of you are worth something to me because you are attractive.
Mm.
You know, there's no turning back on that one.
Mm.
You know, there's no, if you're good at an instrument, you know, it's fine. It's good. You're good at an instrument and someone else might be better and that's fine. You've practiced for long as you practice. But there's something intrinsic about being attractive. You just are it and you just want that. You just want that validation that has no... You have to practice. You just are.
Mm.
You know? I don't know. I think there's a lot to be worked on for a lot of people in terms of self-esteem and how much it plays into their idea of relationships and stuff like that.
This is such like, yeah, this is such a deep, deep space. And I think a lot of the time, a place where people can surface level convince themselves that they're like, that they have made progress or that they're confident.
Yes.
But then you dig, like, and I think, actually, when you start getting validation from a partner, it's a really good example of it because, you begin getting that validation from a partner and suddenly you're like, whoa, like, I'm the tits. And it's like, there's a problem here. Like, you can't just believe that when someone's giving the validation. Yeah. Fuck, I'm in that trap right now. Yeah. Like, this is by no means somewhere that I'm enlightened at all. It's amazing to get it from someone else. It's so fucking amazing. Yeah. And I think right now I'm at a space where my past is so broken in that way that actually I'm right now needing the exterior validation.
Mm-hmm.
And then my next step will be not needing the exterior validation, but being okay with actually right now, that's what I'm needing.
There's this phenomenon in physics. Here we go.
Yeah.
Called no overshoot. So, no, like, overshoot. Let's say you want to measure something at a critical value of a magnetic field or whatever, but you know that the sample will be changed by going over a certain point. So you've got to get there without going above the value. So you get closer and closer and closer without actually going over. And you've got to have this upwards momentum to get there. And then, you know, sometimes you do overshoot and then settle back in that place. And, you know, this could be seen as like, you know, as you get more confident, you might briefly get into arrogance, but then you've got to know when to cut it off. But if you're not yet at the level you want to be, if you're not yet have what you need to get the momentum upwards. You know, you need to get that validation.
Yeah.
Get above and beyond where you need to go and then settle back down. You know, there's a parabola and arc.
Yeah.
Oh, I do physics. and so, yeah, like, and if you can see that, you know, right now I need this momentum, I need to learn this, then yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
But just know at some point that you're going to have to put the brakes on, you're going to have to slow it down and reverse the direction.
Yeah. You know? Oh, that's really validating, actually. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I heard recently someone talking about self-love and being like, for them, like, love yourself more or have more love for yourself was too, too difficult a phrase or too difficult a task.
Mm-hmm.
So they found that, I don't know who this person was, it's a bit annoying, but being more loving towards yourself was an easier thing to tackle. Because you know how to be loving towards something, but actually have more self-love. It's like, what the fuck is self-love? What the fuck does that mean? But be more loving towards yourself. I was like, oh, I like that. And I think being more loving towards yourself helps with catching you in those moments of like unworthiness or...
Which strike every single person. All the time. Like, which is something I need advertising. I need to be told.
Yeah.
Everyone... Even the person you pedestalize to bits who is, you know, surely they have not a single flaw. They have hard moments, you know, they have everything. And God, it's so hard to remember sometimes that even the stars among us, you know, fall at night. But yeah, it's, you've got to find the ways to phrase these things that work in your darkest moments because you don't need them the lightest.
Exactly.
You know? And I think phrasing things in terms of patterns you'll recognize from others is easier than, you know, self-love, like you say, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
But, you know, imagine that you were found someone else in the state you're in, what would you do? That's way easier to manage. You know, make him a cup of tea, go, how British of me,
legitimately, yeah,
and go sit and chat to them, go journal. You know, there's an equivalent for all of that sort of stuff. And God, if learning to be on my own has not done wonders for my self-esteem, you know, tied in with all of this kind of theme of self-esteem, there was a lot of, you know, I want validation and I want people to be around me to distract me from the lack of validation and all the bad thoughts and all this sort of stuff. And then when you just start spending time on your own, you're like, why do I need validation? I like hanging around with me, and that's all that matters.
Oh, amen. You know?
If you learn that you're happy being around yourself and, you know, you're just there like, hey, this guy's pretty cool, why the fuck does it matter what anyone else thinks? If they don't like you, they don't have to be around you. You can be around you.
Oh, I feel that so badly. Yeah. Oh, there's moments when you're on your own and you're just like, I'm so happy.
Or even better, I'm so great.
Yeah, I'm so wonderful. Oh my God, so true.
Yeah.
I had this beautiful moment alone.
Tell me your best moment alone. This one and then your best moment alone.
So this beautiful moment alone the other day when I moved out from my old fuddy to my dad's house, like one step towards moving overseas. And during the drive, I played, you know the pop party CDs, right?
Of course.
Okay, so...
I grew up in the
2000s. You're English. So for anyone listening who didn't grow up in England, pop parties kind of like the equivalent of Now. And there were Pop Party 1 and 2 that came out
They were better than Now ever was.
Oh, I'm
sorry, they were just better.
They came out... One of them came out in 2004.
Yeah. Crazy Frog on it and everything. I remember. Yeah,
Barbie song. Of course.
Yeah.
And these two CDs were what me and my sister listened to just before we left the UK, but also every time we were ever moving house, and we moved house quite a lot on Waiheke, we were renting, so we moved around, and we would always play Pop Party 2, Pop Party 1 when we were moving house. And so on this drive, I played Pop Party 2, and I was just belting fucking like, my yahee, my yahoo, and like, and I genuinely, I had this rush of like, no one else would understand this moment, apart from maybe my sister.
Yes.
No one else would understand how joyous and how full fucking circle and how beautiful this moment is. Yeah. Even my partner, even when I tell people about it, no one's going to fucking get it. And I was so happy to be alone, and I was so happy to be able to experience that. That moment. Yeah.
And is that your best, or is that just one of the recent ones? I can give a story while you think.
Okay, you give me a story while I think. I'll listen and think.
Gonna give you my best, but what I think is more kind of intriguing, more interesting is I realized I found that there's a space I find in my head when I want to be happy on my own. I talked briefly about this before, but there's this scene in my mind that I go and exist in. Like, a lot of people have seen Sherlock, he's got a mind palace. Well, I've got a mind hill. And it's a place I go and sit on when I want to be alone. And it's just me. But I say that. It's this scene, and there's a big cliff. And up on the cliff are all these tall pine trees and grass all waving in the wind. And I'm sat there around a fire, and my childhood dog is sat next to me. And we just sit there, and he's sat on my lap, and I stroke him. We just stare out over the cliff into the endless forest. You know, and I think the reason I like talking about this scene is, firstly, it's really comforting for me, but it summarizes the quaintness, the coziness of enjoying being on your own. Every time I enjoy personally being on my own, it's a thing of like, I'm coddled in my own company. I'm wrapped and comforted by my own arms. You know what I mean? I'll go find some little spot and kind of, you know, get so far away from all the noise of reality that it's just quiet and it's just me and there's nothing that I have to do. And it's so gorgeous. And this is juxtaposed to your story of like expression of you know. But I love the, who would have guessed it's easier to be on your own than around people, you know, but it can be.
Or the two work simultaneously very well together. Like if you're a people person and you love interacting with people, then I think that you're probably also one of those people who's like, if I don't get my alone, if I don't get those quiet moments alone, like very quickly, everything for me, things will fall apart.
You know what? I would have disagreed with you vehemently just a few months ago. And maybe I still do. Like I the whole introvert extrovert debate, I've always thought was a bit silly. I've always liked to think of it in terms of how long can you go in constant company and how long can you go on your own? And I used to be able to, I was traveling and going around and seeing my friends in the UK before I came here. And I could go like 3 or 4 weeks in constant company before I was like, okay, I need a break. I'll go on a few hours walk and recharge. And I used to be able to go like a few hours walk alone before it was too much for me, before the demons crept in or whatever. You know what I mean? And that's changing, but honestly, like, and yes, I'm extrovert as fuck, but honestly, I still don't know if I need those quiet moments to recharge. You know, it's, there's an addiction to extroversion. You know what I mean? You can keep this momentum going. As long as there's people around, you can keep it going. It's fire. And it's only when they all disappear and that, you know, that this fire starts to realize there's no fuel left, that it just quenches, it's gone. You know, then you're exhausted.
That was happening yesterday. Literally that exact thing. At the party, I was like, I want everyone to say, I want everyone to say. And then the moment everyone was gone, I was like, whoa, I have nothing left.
But I do think I agree with you now, because now I take time to myself. And when I do turn that fire on, when I do interact with people, I have so much more energy for it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like I endlessly enjoyed it before, but it burned me out.
Yes. This is what I mean. Like to be able to be sustainable as a person who loves interacting with people.
God, sustainability is hard to find. Not even like in terms of like I go to the shops and fill my jar with shampoo, but like in terms of like can I live my life in a way that can keep going forever?
Okay. The last thing that we do on this podcast, as you may be aware, is something called I am statements.
Okay.
And so I pass the ball over to you, and you, for as long as you want, have to say statements that begin with I am and end with whatever you'd like.
Oh, God. Okay.
A space for affirming something about yourself. Often people have used this as a space to, like, reclaim something that's been...
For example,
I am bossy. Yeah. To like reclaim something that has been used against them.
Yeah, okay.
You don't have to.
It's just
a space for you to explore.
Because everyone has these words which have been thrown at them.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I am weird. I am I won't shut up. You know,
that's not I am.
I am won't shut up. You happy? I'm annoying. I am driven. I am pathetic. I'm flawed, but I love it. I am caring. And I say that in the way that I mean it's a thing that's maybe not used against me as words, but fuck, I wish I wasn't. God, why can't I just be a psychopath? You know, the world would be mine. Yeah. I'm content. Mm. That's been a long time coming. This is probably one of the first times in my life I could have said that and meant it.
Mm.
I am honoured to be here.
Mm.
God, people are so multifaceted and deep and fathomless. You said your story about being in the car and listening to that song. Caden, your partner, probably the person you spend the most time with in the world right now, has no hope of ever understanding that. And neither does anyone. No one you ever meet will ever fully fathom anyone, the full depth of anyone, which is why it's so important to learn to be with yourself. Because you're the only person that's gonna appreciate all of that detail. You know, all you can try is find the depth in others and be astounded by it, because you can't try and understand it.
Yeah.
So I am in awe.
Mm. Mm. There's a song by oh fuck, who's it by? It's like it's something along the lines of a scent when I was a child, like if I'd find it. Up and sell it.
But 21 Pilots.
Yeah, 21 Pilots, thank you.
Blurry Face?
Say again?
Blurry Face, was it?
No.
But
I'd only ever sell one to my brother because we had the same nose, same clothes. And I've said this to my sister before, and it's like she's the only person that gets close to understanding shit like that, because we share such a similar essence. Yeah, but even then,
and it only drifts.
Yeah.
You know, I've left my brother back in the UK, and I'm just watching from afar as he becomes different. And it's not bad. He has, of course, the right to be whoever he wants to be, but, you know, further and further away from the thing we share.
It's like you were fertilized in the same soil, but you're still a different seed.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the sun shines in different days and we grow in different directions.
Especially on different sides of the planet.
Yeah, especially. Sun doesn't even shine at the same bloody time.
Literally, it's like the sunflowers go opposite directions because you're getting different...
We've got hemispheres and...
Fucking hemispheres.
Every spheres and... fears.
Yeah.
Regular fears.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so, so grateful that...
We managed to
create the space. Yeah. That the cosmos aligned for us to do it.
Of course.
As it was always going to.
They love to.
They love to align like that. And I'm also... I'll take this moment to announce to the world that I'm so grateful to know you and so grateful that our squiggly lines have crossed over. I'm a firm believer that any person you meet in your life changes your life, because you could never have unmet that person.
Yes.
And I'm grateful that not only have we got to meet, but we've actually got to share that cloud and have some crossover.
Clouds colliding, silver linings and all.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thank you for...
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's been a sweet short pleasure, hasn't it? God, what a story.